Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take complex topics and pull out the truly essential insights for you. Today, we're venturing into the world of commercial law with a really fascinating case, Hayes Merchandise, Inc. v. Dewey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might be thinking this sounds like, you know, dusty legal jargon, but Sesame, this case provides some incredibly practical lessons for anyone involved in buying or selling goods, and that's probably all of us at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
We're going to unpack what happens when a deal goes sideways and how the law, specifically the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC, steps in to sort it out.
Exactly. Think of this as understanding the playbook for commercial transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Hayes v. Dewey beautifully illustrates two critical concepts under the UCC, when you've legally accepted goods, and what it takes to justifiably back out of that acceptance, to revoke it.
Right.
It's not just about the black letter law. It's about the real world implications of how businesses communicate, and importantly, how they act.
Okay, so let's set the scene. Picture this. It's Christmas time in 1967, and Mr. Dewey, who owns a paint store, decides to, you know, jump on the holiday shopping craze.
Yeah, bit of a pivot.
He creates a Toyland section and orders a few $1,000s worth of stuffed animals from Hayes Merchandise, somewhere between, what, $2,500 and $3,500, as the records show.
Right, a decent order. But right off the bat, things don't go as planned. When the shipments start arriving at Dewey's store, he realizes he's received significantly fewer toys than he ordered, actually less than half, which is a big deal.
Less than half. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So naturally, he reaches out to Hayes Merchandise to complain about the shortage.
And what kind of response did he get, do we know? Is it like, oh, sorry, here they come, or?
Well, from what we can tell, it was rather vague. Dewey was given assurances that the missing stuffed animals were on back order, but these promises never really translated into actual shipments.
Ah.
Despite this substantial shortfall, Dewey didn't immediately reject the partial deliveries he did receive. And here's where it starts to get interesting legally.
Okay.
On December 1st, Dewey decided to cancel any further toy orders, which, you know, considering the circumstances, seems like a reasonable step for him to take.
Sure, makes sense.
However, he still held on to several unopened boxes of toys that had already arrived.
So let me make sure I've got this straight. Dewey knows he hasn't received the full order. He's complained. He's stopped any more shipments from coming. But he's still got a bunch of these stuffed animals just sitting in his store. What happens next in this Toyland saga?
Well, the clock keeps ticking, right? And the entire Christmas selling season comes and goes.
Right. December 25th passes.
Exactly. Then, months later, we're talking well after the holidays are long over, Dewey attempts to return a significant portion of the toys he still has, valued at almost $2,000.
Whoa. Months later, like in the new year?
Yeah, well into the new year. And as you might imagine, Hayes Merchandise wasn't exactly thrilled about taking back a load of unsold Christmas toys in, like, February or March.
I can imagine. Not exactly peak season for stuffed reindeer.
Not at all. So they refused the return and subsequently sued Dewey for the outstanding balance of the original order.
Ouch. Okay, so the timeline here is really critical, isn't it? He raises concerns early, cancels future orders, but then waits until way past the point of sale to try and return a large chunk of the goods. That definitely raises some red flags from a legal perspective.
Absolutely, it does. And that brings us neatly to the first major legal concept we need to unpack, acceptance. Under Section 2606 of the UCC, there are specific ways a buyer can be legally considered to have accepted goods.
Okay.
And importantly, this isn't just about signing on the dotted line. It's very much about your actions.
Okay, so what exactly constitutes acceptance under the UCC in a situation like Dewey's? It's got to be more than just the delivery truck showing up, right?
Precisely. Acceptance occurs when you, as the buyer, have had a reasonable opportunity to inspect the goods, and then you do one of a few things. Either you signify to the seller that the goods are conforming, meaning they meet the contract requirements, or that you'll take them even if they don't conform. Acceptance also happens if you simply fail to make an effective rejection after you've had that reasonable opportunity to inspect. You can't just sit on them forever without saying anything.
Right. Silence can be acceptance sometimes.
It can. But perhaps most relevant to Dewey's case is the third way you can accept goods: if you perform any act that's inconsistent with the seller's ownership of those goods.
Ah, okay. Acting like they're yours. Let's dig into that. What did Dewey do that signaled to the court that he was treating these toys as his own property?
Well, the Washington Supreme Court, agreeing with the initial trial court, pointed to several really key actions Dewey took. First, he kept the shipments without attempting to return them immediately. even after complaining.
Okay, he held on to them.
Crucially, he went to the trouble of pricing all the toys, including the ones in those unopened boxes, and then displayed them for sale in his newly created Toyland section.
Putting price tags on them? That seems pretty significant.
It is. And there was even evidence presented that he actually managed to sell some of these stuffed animals to his customers during the Christmas season.
Oh, okay. So he sold some.
Yes. These actions, taken together, sent a pretty clear message that he was treating the toys as his own inventory, which is directly at odds, you know, inconsistent with the idea that he was rejecting them due to the shortfall in the order.
Right. That paints a clear picture. If you're putting price tags on something, putting it on your shelf, and actively trying to sell it to your customers, yeah, that becomes a tough argument to make later that you never actually accepted those goods.
Exactly.
So the court essentially said, Dewey, look at what you did. Your actions indicate you accepted these toys. But that's not the end of the road, is it? Because the UCC also provides a mechanism for a buyer to revoke their acceptance under certain circumstances.
That's correct. Revocation of acceptance is the second critical legal hurdle in this case, governed by Section 2608 of the UCC. This allows a buyer to essentially undo their initial acceptance of goods. But, and this is a big but only if very specific conditions are met, it's definitely not just a matter of buyer's remorse.
Right. You can't just change your mind easily. So what are the key requirements that Dewey would have had to meet to justifiably revoke his acceptance of these stuffed animals?
Okay, there are several important boxes to check here. First and foremost, the nonconformity of the goods in Dewey's case, receiving significantly fewer stuffed animals than ordered, must have substantially impaired the value of the goods to him.
Substantially impaired.
Okay.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's important to understand that courts don't just take the buyer's word for it that they were really disappointed. They assess this objectively, looking at Dewey's specific needs for his Toyland venture. Was the shortage so significant that it fundamentally undermined his ability to run that seasonal business effectively? It's not just about his personal feelings of being let down.
Okay, so it's an objective test based on his situation, but not just his subjective feeling.
Precisely. And what did the court ultimately decide on this issue of substantial impairment in Dewey's situation? Did they agree that getting less than half the ordered amount met this threshold?
Yeah, what was the finding there?
Interestingly, the trial court did not find that the shortage constituted a substantial impairment of the value of the toys to Dewey's business.
Really? Even less than half?
Even less than half. And because this was considered a finding of fact by the trial court, the appellate court, the Washington Supreme Court, in this instance gave significant weight or deference to that initial determination. They essentially said they didn't see enough evidence or reason to overturn the trial court's judgment on this particular factual point.
Okay, so that's a key takeaway. Substantial impairment is a legal term with a specific and sometimes high bar. It goes beyond simply being unhappy that you didn't receive everything you expected.
Absolutely. It has to be a significant problem that fundamentally affects the value and usability of the goods for their intended purpose in the buyer's specific circumstances.
Got it. What's the next requirement for revocation?
The second key requirement for a valid revocation of acceptance is that the buyer must attempt to revoke within a reasonable time after they discover, or should have discovered, the nonconformity.
A reasonable time. And considering the timeline we laid out earlier, Dewey waiting until after the entire Christmas selling season to try and return these seasonal goods, that sounds problematic.
You've hit on a central point. For seasonal items like Christmas toys, the courts generally consider waiting until after the primary selling season has completely ended to be an unreasonable delay. The court here placed a strong emphasis on the seasonal nature of the merchandise.
Right.
As they famously noted, and this is a line often quoted from this case, in seasonal markets, delay is fatal. You can't return Christmas trees in January.
Huh. Okay, that's a really clear and relatable analogy. Makes perfect sense.
The commercial value of Christmas toys just plummets after December 25th. So the court reasoned that waiting until months later was simply too long for these types of goods.
So even if Dewey had managed to convince the court about substantial impairment, the fact that he waited so long to attempt the return would likely have been a fatal blow to his revocation claim anyway.
That's the strong implication, yes. The timing was just way off for seasonal merchandise.
Okay. Is there a third requirement?
Yes, there is. The third and final main requirement for a valid revocation is that the buyer must properly notify the seller that they are revoking their acceptance.
Notify them? Does that mean sending a formal letter, like certified mail?
Not necessarily. While formal notice is always a good idea for clarity and proof, the notification doesn't have to be in a specific format. However, it does need to clearly communicate to the seller that the buyer no longer wants the goods and is essentially trying to undo the sale because of the nonconformity.
Okay, so the seller needs to understand that the buyer is backing out. How did Dewey's actions measure up against this notification requirement?
Well, this is where Dewey's earlier conduct really undermined his position again. While sometimes the buyer's actions can implicitly communicate a rejection or revocation, Dewey's actions, remember, keeping the toys, pricing them, displaying them prominently, actively trying to sell them, were completely inconsistent with any notion that he was rejecting or revoking his acceptance.
Right. Those actions screamed, I accept these and I'm trying to sell them.
Exactly. As the court pointed out, and this is a crucial principle, acts of dominion over the goods are inconsistent with revocation. You simply can't treat the goods as if you own them and are trying to profit from them and then later claim effectively that you never really wanted them and want to send them back. Your behavior has to be consistent with your stated intention.
Right. It all comes down to consistency. You can't have it both ways. So let's just quickly recap the really key legal principles at play in Hayes v. Dewey that folks should remember. First, the subjective standard for substantial impairment, it's not just about your subjective feelings.
Exactly. It's about a significant, demonstrable impact on the value of the goods for their intended commercial purpose, considering your specific business needs. A real, objective hit to the value.
And second, the critical element of acting consistently with your intentions. If you intend to reject or revoke, you can't then turn around and act like you own the goods and are trying to sell them.
Precisely. Your actions need to clearly and unequivocally align with your stated intention to reject or revoke. No mixed signals.
And finally, it's important to remember that principle of appellate deference. The Washington Supreme Court, as the appellate court, largely accepted the factual findings of the original trial court, unless those findings were clearly unsupported by evidence.
Right.
So the trial court's determination on whether the shortage substantially impaired the value carried significant weight in the final outcome.
That's a vital point about the legal process. Appellate courts generally don't reweigh the evidence. They look for legal errors or clearly erroneous factual findings. So the trial judge's view on the facts often holds a lot of sway.
Okay. So for listeners who might not be running a paint store or selling seasonal toys, what are the really practical takeaways from this case that they can apply in their own dealings, whether business or even sometimes personal purchases?
The lessons here are surprisingly universal, I think. First, act promptly and communicate clearly. If you receive goods or services that aren't what you expected or contracted for, address the issue with the other party quickly. Don't let things linger, especially with goods that might have a limited shelf life or a specific selling window, like seasonal items.
That's no procrastinating.
Exactly. Make your intentions crystal clear. Are you rejecting the goods outright? Are you willing to accept them but need some sort of price adjustment or other accommodation? Indecision and delay can be very costly, as Dewey found out.
That makes perfect sense. Time really is of the essence in many commercial situations. What else?
Second, always remember that your actions often speak louder than any words you might say later on. Be consistent in how you handle goods you intend to reject or revoke acceptance of. Don't use them. Don't try to profit from them. Don't modify them. Don't do anything that suggests you are treating them as your own property.
Like pricing them and putting them up for sale.
Precisely. Those kinds of actions can seriously undermine, if not completely destroy, any later claim of rejection or revocation that you might try to make.
Okay. Consistency is key. Anything else?
And finally, just reinforcing that point about legal terms.
Yeah.
Understand that concepts like substantial impairment have very specific meanings in the law. It's not just about your personal level of disappointment or inconvenience.
Right.
There generally needs to be a significant and objectively demonstrable impact on the value and usability of the goods for their originally intended purpose. You need to be able to articulate and potentially prove how the nonconformity has genuinely hindered your ability to use or resell the goods as you originally planned.
Got it. So as we bring this deep dive into Hayes Merchandise v. Dewey to a close, what's the core message or principle that really sticks out from this case?
For me, this case really hammers home the UCC's strong emphasis on the importance of timely and consistent behavior in commercial dealings. The law provides mechanisms and remedies for buyers, yes, but those remedies must be used correctly and crucially within a reasonable time frame.
Right. You can't just wait indefinitely, especially when dealing with seasonal or perishable goods, or things whose value fluctuates rapidly, and then expect to be able to easily unwind a transaction months down the line. The law expects diligence.
It's a really good reminder that while the law offers protections in commercial transactions, it also expects a certain level of, well, reasonableness, clear communication, and consistent action from everyone involved. You have responsibilities as well as rights.
Exactly. Dewey's attempt to maybe, you know, salvage something from his Toyland venture ultimately became a costly but valuable lesson in understanding his obligations and rights as a buyer under the Uniform Commercial Code.
So, something to think about as we wrap up. Considering the massive growth of online shopping, e-commerce, global marketplaces, and just the incredibly fast pace of modern commerce, it really makes you wonder how these established principles of acceptance and revocation are playing out today.
That's a great point. Does the seasonal nature of goods still carry the same legal weight when you can theoretically sell Christmas decorations in July on a global platform? Are there new considerations and challenges that arise in this increasingly digital commercial landscape? Definitely something to ponder.
Absolutely. The context changes, technology changes. How the law adapts or how these principles are applied in new contexts is always evolving. And for anyone listening who wants to delve even deeper into this specific area, I would highly recommend taking a closer look at the actual text of UCC sections 2606 on acceptance and 2608 on revocation.
Good advice.
Gaining a thorough understanding of the specific language and the nuances interpreted by courts is truly essential for anyone seriously involved in the buying or selling of goods today.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Hayes Merchandise v. Dewey. Hopefully it provided some useful insights. Until our next exploration, keep thinking critically and stay informed.